Did you know that since 1990, so 35 straight seasons, at least four teams have qualified for the playoffs in every season that were not in the postseason the year prior? Last year, all eight division winners made the playoffs the season before, so 2023, which was the first time every division winner made the playoffs the previous season since 1976. Also, at least one team has gone worst to first, winning its division the season after finishing in or tied for last place in 20 of the last 23 seasons. But no one did it last year. So how's this thing all gonna start? Who's it gonna be? Who's gonna make the playoffs? We're solving for week one of the 2025 season today. Welcome to The Numbers Game. I'm Cynthia Freeland and happy football. I hope you enjoyed the first two games because I did, and I'm so excited to be back. Everything feels better than ever. Let's go. I hope you caught all the special episodes this week. We did two on fantasy, one on season-long win totals and futures. So much fun. And that you caught the first two games. So we did the opener and the Friday night special. All of them are on this channel. You can actually also listen to this show anywhere you get your pods this season as well. And there's NFL IQ, where two-time Super Bowl winner Logan Ryan and I go through some of the biggest storylines through the lens of players and numbers and how they go together or sometimes don't. Since we had so many episodes this week, we're going to rip through the main slate with one key stat for each team. And don't worry, you'll get all your scores and totals and all that good stuff. I'll also add in some action item lists and breaks too, but this will be way quicker than most episodes. So let's get right to it. The Bucs lost both matchups against the Falcons last season. In fact, they're 1-4 in their last five against them, but Tampa finds themselves 2.5-point favorites in this game, where the total is 47.5. Next Gen Stats shows that running backs Bucky Irving at 36.9% and Bijan Robinson at 32% had the highest forced missed tackle rate and number two on carries last season. So let's evaluate their situations in this matchup. Atlanta allowed the sixth most rushing first downs last season at 132. And while the Falcons seemed to focus on addressing their 31st ranked pass rush, they had just 31 sacks and a 28.1 pressure percentage, it's less clear how that translates to shoring up opposing offenses from rushing to earn a new set of downs. Tampa Bay allowed the fourth fewest rushing yards per game in the NFL last season, just 97.8. Now zoom in on weeks 12 through 18, it was just 58.7 yards per game. That was the fewest. Last season, the Bucs held Robinson to under 65 rushing yards with zero rushing touchdowns in both games. And since 2023, that's four games, Robinson averaged 40.3 rushing yards per game with just one rushing touchdown against them. The result, I have Tampa taking it 26-23, which is both by more than 2.5 points and more than 47.5 total points. I have Tampa taking the first step in their efforts to five-peat as NFC South champs. Arizona heads to the Superdome to take on the Saints. The Cardinals are 6.5-point favorites in a game where the total is 43 points. Saints running back Alvin Kamara led the team with 1,493 scrimmage yards and 8 touchdowns in just 14 games last season. He added 68 receptions and 543 receiving yards to the team, which were actually second among running backs and the most on the team. So the most receptions was the running back. The Cardinals' run defense ranked bottom 10 against the run in yards per carry at 4.6. They allowed a 13% explosive run rate, that was ninth, and they allowed the seventh highest completion percentage to pass catchers aligned in the backfield. To address this, Arizona brought back Calais Campbell, who led in the position last season with an 18.1 run stop rate, and they added Dalvin Tomlinson, and they drafted Walter Nolan. The Cardinals used 13 personnel, so three tight end sets, at the highest rate last season. It was 16%, and they earned 6 yards per play when they did so. Play action was the ticket here. They averaged almost 13 yards per attempt. It was best in the league. The Saints will look to lock down tight end Trey McBride, who the offense really ran through last season. And we'll see if Kyler Murray to Marvin Harrison Jr., that connection, has improved from the league's lowest completion percentage duo. It was 53.4% last season when Kyler Murray targeted Harrison Jr. Final score, Arizona 24, New Orleans 17. To tell the whole story about Harrison Jr., he actually led the NFL with 40 tight window targets last season. Remember, that's a target with less than 1 yard of separation. That was 35% of his targets, the highest rate in the NFL, and he had 5 receiving touchdowns off of them, second most in the NFL. He also put on some muscle and was, I was told, he had the best camp among the offensive players when I was visiting last month. Rounding out the NFC South teams, the Panthers head to Jacksonville to take on the Jags, where the Big Cats with the teal tongues in their logo are 3.5-point favorites, and the total is 45.5 points. If you aren't a stickler for mascot details like me, that means Jacksonville is favored. The teal tongue team's defense, say that five times fast, blitzed at the lowest rate last season. It was 16.1%, and they had the third lowest pressure rate at just 28.3%. New defensive coordinator Anthony Campanile was the Packers linebackers coach last season, and that team also didn't blitz much. They ranked second lowest at 18.2%, but they did use simulated pressures at the second highest rate, disguises. Carolina's defense blitzed at the ninth highest rate last season. It was over 33%, but they generated the lowest pressure rate at just 25.5%. And they don't have Jadeveon Clowney, who was their pressure leader last season. He had 17 more pressures than the next closest defender on the team. Bottom line, my model has Jacksonville winning 24-20. The Jags O-line allowed the fifth lowest pressure rate in the NFL last season, 27.4%. Both left tackle Walker Little and left guard Ezra Cleveland, they are still there. They both ranked in the top five, meaning lowest pressure rates allowed at their respective positions. Let's use the link to the AFC South and switch over from the Jags to the Colts, who are 1.5-point home favorites against the visiting Dolphins. The total here is 46.5 points. I am going back to the Tua quick passing. Well, why? Because it forecasts to stay the same. Just as a reminder, his time to throw 2.42 seconds last season, fewest air yards per attempt 5.6. Those things forecast to stay directionally the same. The trend will be his friend. Why? He needs to stay in rhythm. Teron Armstead, no longer there. This helps him leverage all of the yak that his receivers, you know, we get it. Okay, so on these sub 10 air yarders, Tua was second best in terms of completion percentage and EPA per dropback. But new Colts defensive coordinator Luana Rumo, he has success against these. The Bengals allowed the fifth fewest EPA per dropback and sixth lowest completion percentage on such passes, and I think he has a better roster at the Colts. New Colts quarterback Daniel Jones had the second lowest success rate and fourth fewest EPA per dropback against the blitz. That was over six seasons with the Giants. The Dolphins blitzed at the 14th lowest rate, so like mid, right? 26% of the time, fine. But when they did, they were effective. They forced the eighth lowest success rate and the third fewest EPA per dropback. Which trends influence the outcome more? I have Indianapolis winning 26-24 in a relatively high-scoring game. Part of this is due to uncertainty of just how okay some of the guys on Miami's injury report are, as in Devon Achane, Tyreek Hill. They seem good to go, but are they 100%? Tennessee and rookie quarterback Cam Ward host Denver and their second-season quarterback Bo Nix. The Broncos are 7.5-point favorites, and the total on this one is 42.5 points. When the Titans' T'Vondre Sweat was on the field last season, Tennessee's run defense held opponents to just 4.2 yards per carry. That would have been eighth fewest. And they just had a 38% rushing success rate, seventh lowest. Without Sweat, those numbers jumped to 5.3 yards per carry, worst in the NFL, and a 45% success rate, seventh highest. Rushing has been a focal point of the Broncos' offense this offseason. This will be a good test. The Broncos' defense blitzed on 37% of opposing dropbacks last season, fourth highest rate. But they were very successful when rushing four or fewer pass rushers. They had a league-high 37% pressure rate. What is a good measure of success here? Well, let's look at how rookies have fared on average against the blitz. Since 2018, all of the qualified rookie quarterbacks have averaged just 6.5 yards per attempt and a negative 0.13 EPA per dropback average against the blitz. Veterans are 7.5 and positive 0.01. I'm saying by the end of the season, I would bet Cam Ward's numbers look a lot more like the vets. Final score projection, Broncos win 26-17. One more thing about Denver's blitz. They did it on early downs at the second highest rate in the league, about 41% of the time, but the eighth lowest rate on third down. So let's see how they use this strategy to really welcome Cam Ward into the league. Here is my confidence list for the week. You will notice that it supports choosing the Broncos in Survivor. If you want to be different from the probable crowd who will likely be on Denver or Arizona, maybe consider Jacksonville. This is also a great spot to point out two top end touchdowns and one top tier guy that could be in a bad situation. Kind of like two truths and a lie, but the idea is to give two high probability player touchdowns and one situation that could be a little dicey. If you had AJ Brown in fantasy on Thursday for the opener, you get what I mean. It's not that they aren't great players, it's just maybe that this isn't their week to score a touchdown. Number one, Drake London, touchdown. He led Atlanta with 100 receptions and 1,271 receiving yards, fourth in the NFL, with 9 touchdowns when Penix was the starter in week 16 through 18. That's 3 games and a 40% team target share, highest in the NFL. And even though it's a small sample size, he did have at least 100 receiving yards in 2 of those 3 games. Targeting Tampa through the air is the strategy, especially given the game script my model forecasts. Number 2, Courtland Sutton, dicey. Sutton aligned out wide on 78.5% of his snaps last season, the 14th highest rate in the league. He caught 69 of his 112 targets, 946 yards with 5 touchdowns from this alignment. Now, in his last healthy season though, Lajarius Sneed in 2023 allowed 5 yards per target, second fewest in the NFL, when he was the nearest defender in coverage against players who were lined out wide. Sneed also did not allow a single touchdown on 69 targets that season. Number 3, Terry McLaurin, touchdown. Last season, McLaurin had the second most receiving touchdowns overall with 13, but let's dial in on those tight window targets where he led the NFL in receptions with 19, receiving yards with 244, and touchdowns with 7. Remember, those tight window ones are less than 1 yard of separation. Across the 2 combined meetings with the Giants last season, he caught 3 of 5 tight window targets for 27 yards and 2 touchdowns. Which leads perfectly to DC, where the Commanders are 6-point home favorites over the Giants. This game is projected to have 45.5 points. When you think Malik Nabers against the Commanders, think target share. I know you should think that in every game, but in these games in particular, it's a little bananas. He was targeted on 18 of his 26 routes, so over 69% in just his second career NFL game against the Commanders in week 2 of last season. That was the highest target share for any receiver in a game since at least 2016. Then what happened in week 9 when they matched up again? You're going to man him up and not let anything bad happen? Oh, no. 11 targets on 27 routes. And just so you know, you caught 9 of those for 59. Pretty good stuff from him in this matchup. Jaden Daniels gained a league-high 600 rushing yards on scrambles as a rookie last season. One of them turned into a touchdown. In his 2 meetings with the Giants in particular, Daniels gained 62 rushing yards on 7 scrambles, so that's just under a 9 yard per carry average, and 4 of them turned into first downs. The Giants defense allowed a league-high 10.6 yards per carry across 32 scrambles faced last season. That was the most in terms of defenses who've at least seen 30 scramble attempts since 2016. I like this front to bring a lot of heat, great pass rushing, but Daniels' scrambles are hard to beat, and the G-men allowed an average of 4.5 rushing yards over expected per carry to opposing scramblers last season, also most in the NFL. In the end, my model says Washington wins 27-20. I think the Giants' defensive front is going to be a real problem for opposing offenses in the pass game, but it's worth tracking the run stopping closely because they allowed a league-high 494 rushing yards over expected last season, the second most by any defense in a season since at least 2018. So scrambles and run stopping, track it. The other New York team plays at home and hosts Pittsburgh in a game where the visiting Steelers are field goal favorites and the total is 38.5 points. I'm going back to the Aaron Rodgers quick passing well here. 5th quickest time to throw, 3rd most pass attempts in under 2.5 seconds, and 4th lowest completion percentage and the 2nd most interceptions. We get it. He did a lot. It didn't go so well. Now, why does that matter in this one? Well, the new Jets head coach, Aaron Glenn, who coordinated the Lions defense last season, architected that defense to allow the 3rd lowest completion percentage and 2nd lowest passer rating against quick passes. Also, enter Will McDonald. He had 68 pressures last season, 8th most among all defenders. And when we've seen him match up with the Steelers left tackle Broderick Jones, 21 times we saw it last season, he had 6 pressures and a sack. So quick passes feel like the solution here. Do they go better than before? Hard to say. Justin Fields leveraged a short pass, so 0 to 10 air yards, on 56% of his snaps against single high coverage last season. that would have ranked highest among qualified quarterbacks, but he didn't play enough games. The Steelers aligned pre-snap and single high at the second highest rate, and they actually played it at the highest rate. Just so you know, that's 67.5% of opponent pass plays. Fields had success against it last season, but he also has the league's longest time to throw, and that is not the best idea against TJ Watt, Cam Hayward, and especially now that Elijah Vera Tucker is out, this feels like it could be a bad decision, so he might need to get rid of it a little bit quicker. Bottom line, I have Pittsburgh winning this one, 21-19. One more thing to watch from Rodgers, go routes. He targeted them at the highest rate in the NFL last season, and he completed 32 such passes for a league-high 795 yards with 10 touchdowns. That's tied for second most. DK Metcalf, he loves the go. And he had the second most receiving yards on them last season. Since entering the league in 2019, he actually has the most yards off of goes with 1,765. AFC North and Ohio rivals Cleveland and Cincinnati face off in Berea. The Browns are 5.5-point dogs, and the total is set for 47.5 points. The last time we saw Joe Flacco as a Brown, it was 2023, and he was averaging the second most air yards per attempt at 9.3. He targeted the intermediate area of the field on 26% of his throws and the deep area on 12.3. Now, last season, what happened with the Bengals defense? They struggled against these 10-plus yard passes. So these are called downfield passes. They gave up the third highest completion percentage on them. Want to know yet another way to prove Ja'Marr Chase is a huge difference maker? The Bengals offense averaged 4.2 more yards per play when he was on the field compared to when he was not, 6.3 versus 2.1. That is the largest gap for a single player in the NFL on on-off splits. And the offensive success rate followed suit, 23.2 percentage points higher when Chase was on the field compared to when he wasn't. Final score, Cincinnati wins 27-19, and the Bengals, who are 1-9 in weeks 1 and 2 combined with Joe Burrow as the starter, change the narrative and kick this season off 1-0. This is a great spot for our weekly wildcards. Usually we do 5, but we're abbreviating the list to 3 lesser expected touchdown scores this week. I'm talking about guys who aren't necessarily the top few at their position in projected touchdown scoring. You didn't draft them in round 1 of your fantasy leagues. Guys who have elevated end zone reaching odds this particular week. Number 1, Browns wideout Jerry Jeudy, who had the most receiving yards in the league between weeks 11 and 18 last season with 811. I love the pairing of him with Joe Flacco. Number 2, Jags receiver Travis Hunter. The Panthers paid corner J.C. Horn, yet there are still many areas of that passing defense that are extremely exploitable. Between Brian Thomas Jr. and the electric rookie, it's going to be a long day at the office for that secondary. And number 3, Patriots running back Travion Henderson. The rookie, who likely won't be able to fit in this category by the end of the season, so I'm going to get him in now, has great odds of reaching pay dirt against the Raiders defense, who now see Robert Spillane on the other side of the matchup. Spillane had 60 run stops last season as a Raider, which was the third most in the NFL, and now he's a Patriot. The Patriots are 2.5-point home favorites against the Raiders in a game where 43.5 points are projected. Geno Smith completed over 60% of his passes against man coverage last season, the 8th highest rate in the NFL. The Pats defense played man at the 2nd highest rate, and they held opposing passers to the 5th lowest completion percentage when they used it. Mike Vrabel, he oversaw a Titans defense that played man, surprise, at the 9th highest rate from 2018 to 2023. So guess what? We're likely to see man. But Jabril Peppers, he was released last week, and Christian Gonzalez has been practicing on the side, meaning if he even plays, we don't exactly know what kind of efficiency we're going to see, especially with those kind of key components out. Of the 24 rookies that we have enough data on since 2018, Drake May put up the 2nd highest completion percentage over expected, despite facing the 8th highest pressure rate last season. He also ran for 8.8 yards per carry when scrambling, which was the 2nd most by any rookie quarterback since 2018. With likely improvements to the passing core and O-line, though Will Campbell did pop up on the injury report, May is well positioned to succeed in his 2nd season. Pats win 25-21 in my model. Look out for big ol' number 97 for New England. Milton Williams was a priority signing in the offseason from the Eagles. Williams generated the highest pressure rate, it was 13%, among defensive tackles. Last year, the Patriots' pass rush had the 4th lowest pressure rate, so he's a key signing. The Niners faced the Seahawks in Seattle. San Francisco was a 2.5-point favorite, and the total is 43.5 points. Seahawks quarterback Sam Darnold had some dramatic pressure splits at the end of last season when he was a Viking. And even though the 49ers lost both Leonard Floyd and Malik Collins, those guys generated 48 pressures and 44 pressures respectively, they still have Nick Bosa. He led the team with 61. They also drafted Michael Williams, my defensive rookie of the year pick, and they got Bryce Huff, who was the best in the league on third down in pressure generation 2 seasons ago as a Jet. He had 41 pressures on third down alone. Niners QB Brock Purdy faced unblocked pressure on a league-high 9.6% of his total dropbacks last season. The total number was 51 unblocked pressures. That's third most in the NFL. And the Seahawks defense returns each of their top 4 pressure leaders from a year ago: Derek Hall, Leonard Williams, Boye Mafe, and Jaron Reed. Notably, the Seahawks are one of just 3 teams, along with the Broncos and Rams, to return 4 players who generated 40 or more pressures. And they also acquired veteran pass rusher DeMarcus Lawrence in free agency. So yeah, that's a really nice pickup. My score projection: Seattle upsets the Niners at home 22-21. Clint Kubiak's offensive strategy, along with adding wrinkles and folds like using Cooper Kupp in motion, gives the Seahawks the slight edge. Let's do a mini menu here. 2 blands and a spicy. Remember, bland refers to player projections that happen in at least 60% of my simulations, and spicy, they have more risk, but my models still like them. Bland number 1. Jaxon Smith-Njigba to have more than 60.5 yards. He caught 6 of 7 targets for 50 yards and 3 first downs when the Niners defensive back D'Amador Lenoir was the nearest defender in coverage in week 11 last season, which was the most yards Lenoir allowed all season to any single receiver. Bland number 2, Jonnu Smith to have more than 27.5 receiving yards. Last season, he had 544 yards after the catch, which is more than 24 other teams' tight end position group combined, including the Steelers, who had 458. He did it by forcing a position-high 18 missed tackles. And the spicy: Jameson Williams' longest reception to be more than 22.5 yards. There is a lot to like about the Packers' defensive front. And of course, Xavier McKinney is coming off of a season with a ton of interceptions. But the rest of the secondary does not forecast to be able to shut down Williams from his deep receiving expertise. On to Lambeau, where Micah Parsons' new team is favored by 2.5, and the total is 47.5 points. The theme for both of these stat notes are good things about the defense. So let's start with the Packers. They allowed 4.3 yards per play, second fewest, and the 10th lowest first down conversion rate on third down last year. On third down runs specifically, they allowed just 3.5 yards per carry, 7th fewest, and -4 first downs over expected, 2nd fewest. The Lions called run on about 27% of third downs last season, the 7th highest rate. The Lions defense allowed the fewest EPA per play, it was -0.32, and the 2nd lowest offensive success rate in the red zone last season, holding opposing quarterbacks to a league low 68.8 passer rating inside the 20. Jordan Love completed 67% of his passes, tied for 5th highest, and generated the 11th highest passer rating in the red area last season. This should be yet another good installment of Lions versus Packers. I have the Lions winning 25-23 in an upset. Bringing it back to Parsons, he projects to match up with Penei Sewell, who's allowed the 8th lowest pressure rate at his position, right tackle, since 2022. Now, Parsons' pressure rate over that same period, 20%, which leads the league. Sewell and Parsons lined up opposite each other on 30 plays. Parsons has generated 6 pressures, tied for the highest pressure rate Sewell has allowed to any single pass rusher in his career. The Rams host the Texans and are favored by 2.5. The total is 44. Houston's corners were best and second best in completion percentage allowed last season. Kamari Lassiter at 45.6% and Derek Stingley Jr. at 46.7%. The Texans aligned their corners in off coverage on 62% of their snaps. That was the 9th highest rate in the league. Puka Nacua, however, excels against off coverage. He earned the 11th most yards, 672, and he averaged 4.3 yards per route, the most at the position. LA got consistent pressure when blitzing last season. They had the 4th highest pressure rate in the league, 46.4%. The Texans struggled to protect against the blitz. They allowed the 6th highest pressure rate. I think I have documented my concerns about their O-line enough, but one more time for the people in the back who might have missed it, I'm worried about this O-line. By the slimmest of margins, I have the Rams pulling it off 23-22. There is a lot of volatility about Matthew Stafford's back, along with some of the O-line issues baked into that score. The game that forecast to have the biggest playoff implications this week, Baltimore at Buffalo, where the line has been a-moving. Right now, I see Buffalo by one and the total being 50.5 points. Lamar Jackson led the NFL in yards per attempt against split safeties last season at 9.1. He also threw the second most touchdowns with 13, and he only had one interception against them. The Bills, they utilize split safety coverages. They did it at the fifth highest rate overall last season, but they decreased that rate when facing Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. It was around 42%, so 10 to 15 percentage points lower than normal. When facing split safeties against the Bills, what did Jackson do? Well, he does really well. He had two touchdowns in the AFC divisional round against split safeties. Josh Allen took a sack on just 8.2% of his pressure dropbacks last season, the second lowest rate in the NFL. He also had six designed rushes for 19 yards and a touchdown in the Bills' AFC divisional round win. The six rushes were his most in a game over the last two seasons. This one has all of the makings of a classic. I have the Bills coming out on top 26-24, in large part because they return all five members of their last year's starting offensive line that played together for the second highest snap share of any O-line combo. And they also rank number one in my preseason unit rankings that do factor in O-line injuries. And last but certainly not least, the Monday Nighter at Soldier Field. Another with a line that has not stayed put. As of right now, the Vikings are 1.5-point road favorites, and the total is 44.5 points. See if you can pick up on my stat nugget theme in this one. Caleb Williams faced a league-high 57 unblocked pressures last season. That was the most by any rookie quarterback since at least 2018. The Bears, they had 14 different unique offensive line combinations, tied for the third most in the league as well, did not make things easier for their quarterback. And we know this has been a big point of emphasis for the Bears this offseason. However, it's worth noting, the Vikings defense created the fourth most unblocked pressures in the NFL last season with 54. The Vikings O-line allowed the highest pressure rate in the league last season at just under 38%. They also have three new starters that they focused on this offseason. And as of the last injury report, Christian Darrisaw was on it. The Bears defense last season was the fifth highest pressure rate defense in the league. My point here is that the lines are both sources of volatility, and my score, where the Bears upset the Vikings 22-21, reflects slightly more trust in the sum of the Bears' offense than the sum of the Vikings in this particular week. J.J. McCarthy is essentially a rookie. I do have Minnesota winning more games this season than Chicago, but timing is everything. And there we have it. That's it. The final 14 games of week one put through the numbers game rigor. Next week, we're going to be breaking things up a little bit differently. We'll go a little bit deeper into some of these marquee matchups. So don't worry, it will all be here. We just had so much content this week that we had to go fast for this one. But keep communicating what you like and how you like it. We'll keep making the show even better every single time. And most of all, thank you so much for hanging out. Remember to follow, like, subscribe, download it in pod version, take it along with you. And of course, go to the website, numbersgame, numbersga.me. You can get all the numbers there as well. I don't want you to miss a single number, so come hang out with me wherever. And again, thank you so much. Enjoy week one.